It's the Kim Munson Show.
The Washington Times said that patriotic Americans donated U.S. flags after protesters raised the Mexican flag over the ICE facility.
Analyzing the most important stories.
It is not fair that people come in illegally and they have three square meals a day, TVs and all. There's something that is wrong with this picture.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
When we get into conversations with people, you can get real bombastic with each other because you haven't read it. You don't know what you're talking about.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
So if you understand the issue, then you can have calm, reasonable conversations.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. It is Kim Munson. That's MONSON.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. So welcome to the show. It's Friday. Producer Steve, you've made it. It's Friday. I know that that's one of your favorite days, and it's great to have in studio with me my good friend and one of the partners of the show, and that is Susan Kochevar with 88 Drive-In Theater. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. You've been working too hard, though.
How's that?
It's Thursday.
It is Thursday. I can confirm that.
Can you tell that I'm looking forward to the weekend? You know, I was thinking about it, Steve, on our April Fool's show. I thought, oh, we don't have enough material yesterday. Well, I guess I'm going to contribute to that.
We just got another little tidbit.
There was the time that I called Jill Vecchio, Bill Jecchio.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's Thursday, and tomorrow will be Friday. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I've been burning out on both ends here, Susan. So
a lot going on.
It's great to have you here. And also in studio with me is DK Williams.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here, and you've got a great podcast, The Law. We're going to, you know, I was driving in, and I'm thinking, here we're going to have the Supreme Court show. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to talk about the Supreme Court. Susan, you have been so interested in this documentary on the Supreme Court. And then Chuck Schumer goes out and decides to threaten a couple of Supreme Court justices. Hey, you know, Steve, we can't write this material. It just happens.
This is, I can't tell you how many times in, you know, this year, 2020, it's only really still getting started, although, heck, the first quarter will be over in a couple weeks.
It's hard to believe.
But how many times something has segued into what we already have planned, like this one? This is just...
It's just amazing.
Beyond description.
It's divine providence, I think it is. So, but it is so great to have both of you here. You know, we always work to have these great conversations, segments 3 and 4, to really drill down into these issues. Second segment, I'm hoping that we're going to be talking with Greg Fulton. He is the president of the Colorado Motor Carriers Association. And as we look at these issues, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And Susan, you and I talk about this all the time. If something is a good idea, you should not have to force people.
Right.
And so down at the legislature, they are working on biodiesel mandates. And mandate is another word for force, requirement, regulation. You know, DK, there's all kinds of force words out there. And people need to realize when they hear those words, it's compliance. That's another another big force word. And Americans, you know, we were founded on this whole idea of freedom. And I think most people still really like freedom, DK.
On my personal Twitter account, the little bio says, here's a challenge, or the blue carb challenge. If you have an idea, see if you can implement it without force, no mandates, no bans. Give it a try.
I like that, because ultimately, if something is a good idea, you shouldn't have to force it.
Exactly. You should be able to convince people. They should be able to figure out it's a good idea to do it without the threat of government violence, which is what it is.
Well, and Susan, you and I, again, we talk about this a lot. Socialism, we're hearing these words with Bernie, who is a Marxist, he's really got communist tendencies. He talks about democratic socialism, but the other candidates also, you know, they want to get to government control. They may go about it a little bit differently. I find it astounding when they call these people moderates.
Oh, yeah, there aren't any of them that are moderates. They're all going in exactly the same direction. And the thing I can't tell is certainly with Joe Biden, if you see some of the stuff that's coming out now, I can't I actually think they're all the same. It's just they're couching what they plan to do in
a little gush,
lies.
But and we are seeing, I think that Colorado is actually, you know, we normally talk about Oregon and California being out on the, you know, I don't want to say forefront because that could imply something good. And the fringe, there you go, the fringe, regarding all of these crazy policies. And I think Colorado is actually leapfrogging them on that. So you understand that socialism ultimately comes down to force. Steve, you, producer Steve, you had seen that meme that says you can vote your way into socialism, but you got to fight your way back out.
Well, they were even one step beyond that. They said, shoot your way out.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what we are seeing, my friends, is communism is an actual takeover of everything. But socialism, what that does is it uses the PBIs, the politicians, the bureaucrats, and the interested parties use policy to actually control everything. And we're seeing that in transportation, education, energy, housing, water, broadband, data, healthcare. And so that is why we do this show, is so that you can get your brain around these issues and converse with your friends and family, because we are engaged in this great battle of ideas right now, and words matter. And Ronald Reagan brought down the Berlin Wall with the words, Mr. Gorbachev, take down this wall. Take down this wall. And so we need to engage in this battle of ideas. And first of all, I always like to say thank you to the team to, I can't believe I said it was Friday. Thank you to the team. And that's Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie for your support and your good work. And to each of you listeners, thank you. You're each treasured, you're valued. And today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And again, my website is kimmunson.com. Now, Susan.
My concern is for the dear listener who thinks that they missed a day this week.
So. You know, time flies by, and on this show, it really does.
Yeah.
Susan, we always like to do something inspiration mm-hmm. or wisdom. And so I thought, you know, why don't you take that?
Okay, love to. This quote is from Justice Thomas, Clarence Thomas. And he says, a good argument diluted to avoid criticism is not nearly as good as an undiluted argument, because we best arrive at the truth through a process of honest and vigorous debate. Arguments should not sneak around in disguise as if dissent were somehow sinister, for it is bravery that is required to secure freedom. And that goes along with what I was saying about all of the Democrat candidates. They're all in the same, I think, soup.
Ideology.
They just couch mm-hmm. it differently, you know, so that they don't have to take any pushback.
And one of the issues is you have somebody like Bernie Sanders, and then Biden, who's one of the most leftist. He's left of Obama.
Biden's left of Obama?
Absolutely, yeah. Huh. Obama didn't want Medicare for all, or you know, which is something Biden is pushing for. And so it looks like Biden is less crazy next to Bernie Sanders. So, and it's part of the Overton window, which I know people are aware of. It's that where is that acceptable window of argument, and what's acceptable and what's not? Bernie's moved that way left by the way things he's talked about. And I hate the right left thing, but progressively statist. Mm-hmm. That's more accurate. Mm-hmm. And it makes Biden look less crazy.
Mm-hmm. I'm speechless on that because, and I have actually heard pundits or mainstream media call everybody that's not Bernie as moderates, and
right.
that is not correct. But they're playing to that person out there that has continued to hear that, oh, you know, all these things about Donald Trump, and they think I'm a moderate. And so you're hearing these anchors, these news anchors, call these people moderates. They're nothing close to a moderate on that. So, Susan, in honor of you're an entrepreneur. You're the owner of the 88 Drive-In Theater. So I found a movie theater joke for you. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
A priest walks into a movie theater and finds that most of the seats are taken. So he looks around for a while and finally sees an empty seat. The priest asks the man sitting next to the open seat, excuse me, is this seat saved? The man looks the priest up and down and replies to him, no, but it's willing to listen. Okay, can you believe what happened yesterday with Chuck Schumer? If you didn't,
it's a blatant threat. I mean, it was, and now he's like blaming
Trump?
Almost. Blaming people that heard it for, like, not hearing it right. I mean, it's a classic blame the victim type of strategy. It's clear what he said. He said, you won't know what hit you. You will reap the whirlwind to two Supreme Court justices who are there for life. It's like he doesn't even understand how this whole thing works.
And so, he's a senator, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's quite. Oh, and he's Amy Schumer's cousin. That's actually a fact. So I just refer to him as Amy's cousin now.
Oh, really? I never knew that.
Which makes a lot of sense, I think. You learn a lot from that relationship, I think.
You know, just speaking of that, yesterday we were talking, we did a headline regarding the coronavirus, and there was a CDC official that had made a, now I can't remember her name, but she had made a statement on that, and I got a text from Bob in Michigan. He said, did you know that she's Rod Rosenstein's relative? I can't remember now, Bob. It was sister, cousin, or something like that. But Steve, were you able to pull those two sound bites that we wanted to listen to?
I got them right here.
Okay. Now, do you remember when Donald Trump started to go down this road regarding intelligence? And when, Steve, do you have the date on that, when Schumer said this by any chance?
Let me get it for you.
Okay. Go ahead and play it. But this was a blatant threat, and most people would have capitulated, and Donald Trump did not. He continued on. So let's play that tape and then recording, and then you'll find the date for us.
You take on the intelligence community. They have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you.
Is that a threat? I think so. And Donald Trump did not capitulate to that. So what did Chuck Schumer say yesterday, Steve?
This is Chuck U. Schumer.
Amy's cousin.
he'll be here all week. Try the veal.
I want to tell you, Gorsuch. I want to tell you, Kavanaugh. You have released the whirlwind, and you will pay the price.
D.K. Williams, this is astonishing to have a United States senator call out Supreme Court justices. And what is the whirlwind? Do you know what the whirlwind was that he was talking about?
It is a novel or a play, I think. Weep the World, or the phrase is from Weep the Whirlwind. I can't say that this morning. Mm-hmm. It's a tongue twister. But it means you will basically have the tornado hit your house, basically. That's the metaphor.
Do you know why he's threatening them? I mean, something specific?
Yeah, he was talking at an abortion rally. And so he said they've already reaped the whirlwind, but these guys haven't voted on this yet. He's just anticipating how they will
vote. So he is threatening them on this.
On abortion, right.
And that is so astounding. Now, yesterday we had reported that we thought that due date too late here in Colorado had enough signatures to make the ballot. They got over 135,000 signatures. That is an astounding accomplishment because this was done all via volunteers. Many times as folks are trying to get things petitioned onto the ballot, they hire petitioners, and those petitioners are paid per signature that they get. This particular due date too late, this was all volunteers. They came up with 135,000 signatures, which is more than what they need. But normally you need some kind of a buffer.
And it usually costs hundreds of thousands of dollars because you usually end up having to pay people to do it.
Exactly.
If you can do it without that, that by itself is impressive.
It is. So now we have to actually figure out, they go through and they make sure that all these signatures are good signatures. And my colleague that had I talked with him yesterday, he said that they actually wanted an additional 5,000 buffer on this. But the fact that these were all volunteers, the chances are that they made sure that their petitions are all, have good signatures on them.
Right.
So it looks like it's going to make the ballot. And I think that that we're having a big talk about abortion now in America. And what due date too late will do is it says there's no, it's going to cut it off at 22 weeks. And Susan, at 22 weeks, we now know the baby can feel pain. Actually, the baby can feel pain before that, I think. But at least let's get a line in the sand on this. Because in Colorado, you can abort a baby right up until the day they're born.
You know, the one thing I wanted to make about getting those signatures, too, I think it was about 2 years ago, Coloradans voted to make that a lot harder. You have to get signatures in, I think, every single corner of the state.
Every congressional district, right.
So we made it harder to challenge things that our legislature did or, fix problems. And I think that you know, it was sold as, oh, making it harder for people we don't want to change.
It makes it harder for people that you do want.
want to change stuff. Right, that is one of our ways to push back on the state legislature and stuff that gets through. So you have to be very careful what you are voting for.
Absolutely.
And to that point, it was actually, that was called Raise the Bar. That was actually funded and supported by many Republicans.
It was.
Yeah. And so that was a bit short-sighted and unfortunate. But we're going to go to break. As you know, March Madness is basically here. And hey, basketball fans, Hooters is the place for all your basketball madness. Grab 10 boneless wings and a Big Daddy beer for only $14.99.
Yeah.
Bring in a group and grab 15 boneless wings served in any of their world-famous sauces or dry rubs along with a pitcher of beer for just $20.99.
Let's go.
What are you waiting for? Get your game on at Hooters Rock Chalk Jayhawk. More information, check out my website. That's kimmunson.com. And just check on the sponsors, the drop-down menu. All of my sponsors have their website or landing pages there.
Right.
Yeah, all that. And Steve, you had something you wanted to say. Huh?
Well, during the NFL season, we run the pre-produced Hooters things. Mm-hmm. And that's great. But, man, with DK, what a testimonial there. I mean...
Absolutely.
You make this more believable.
You and I met there for lunch.
We sure did. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm like Ed McMahon to your Johnny Carson.
I like that.
Oh, man. I realize that so many people won't get that reference.
Yeah. Some of those youngsters
20s
out
maybe
there.
Maybe not get it right.
So I tell you what, let's go to break. I'm thrilled to have in studio with me one of my sponsors, and that is Susan Cochevar with the 88 Drive-In Theater, DK Williams with the podcast The Law. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. It's Thursday. Just wanted to confirm that with all of you. In studio is Susan Cochevar, who is the owner of the 88 Drive-In Theater, and DK Williams, who is a podcaster with The Law. Before we jump into some of these other conversations, though, Patty's been really terrific about pulling a bill a day. And actually, I think there's over 500 bills that have been proposed. So I guess we should do two bills a day, which is a bit frustrating. I'm not sure that we need 500 new laws, but probably not. But Senate Bill 20081, and this is the School Information for Apprenticeship Directory. Now, actually, I always get a little concerned when government has a directory. But it says the bill requires the Department of Labor and Employment, those are PBIs, to collaborate with the Department of Education, PBIs, to include in the Colorado State Apprenticeship Resource Directory the name and contact information for at least one designated apprenticeship training program contact for every public high school and school district. Susan Cochevar, do you think we need a law for that?
I do not think we need a law for that. The other thing is we do not need government in training employees because government can't move fast enough and has no idea what private business needs.
And that is evident down at the State House. We were talking offline that the Denver Business Journal just recently reported that the number of business dissolutions is up from the Secretary of State. The number of new filings for business is down. And so when they go out and tout all this economic development by the government is another other code words, DK, for
corporate welfare
and picking winners and losers.
Yes.
Okay. And so government cannot do that. Susan, you've probably changed a number of young people's lives with your business you hire them, you train them, and really you know, they have an opportunity to work with the public, to handle money, to realize they need to show up on time. You don't need government telling you to do that. And in fact, government is trying to get their hands all over small business people with, you know, things out there like the forced minimum wage, the forced family paid leave act, all those kinds of things. And I'm seeing restaurants go out of business.
You are. They're crushing us with all the regulations. If you just go and look at the Department of Labor and all the rules they have for how you're supposed to get along with your employees, you couldn't run anything that way. And they make employers treat employees like robots. No wonder nobody gets along and doesn't like their job. Everything is micromanaged. That's no fun. And the costs are huge in complying with all of this stuff. It just makes you a target for somebody that gets mad at you. We're here to help you. You have no idea what every business needs. You can't make a law that works for everybody. It won't work.
And I really think as we are watching what's happening down at the state legislature that we are leapfrogging over California and Oregon, and that is not something to be proud of, DK Williams.
No, and it makes every legislation or every regulation and piece of legislation makes it harder for a business to hire people. And the minimum wage is a great example of that. And it's like the math just doesn't add up. The more it costs to hire somebody, the fewer people are going to be hired. And you will see sometimes progressives with air quotes say economists say it won't have any appreciable effect. Well, whenever you see something that says economists or scientists or whatever, that means two people said it.
Right, right. So it's plural.
Or at least two people said it. So it doesn't mean that much. And they always say it's not, the difference isn't appreciable. They're admitting there's a difference. Mm-hmm. They're just saying that difference is worth it for those few people to be negatively affected. So we can do whatever we're trying to do here. So call them out on that when you see it. They will admit that it hurts people at the bottom. They're just saying, that's not enough to matter. And that's what happens with socialism and collectivism in general. When the collective becomes more important than the individual, individuals will be sacrificed.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is well said. I was down just last week in Cherry Creek, a place that I've normally, you know, I'll meet friends for late afternoon for happy hour or whatever. It was Brio Restaurants, and it's closed in Cherry Creek. I don't know details on that, but that has been there forever. And, you know, one of the other things that they did in Cherry Creek is, you know, we see this continual assault on our cars.
Yes.
Getting people out of our individual personal vehicles. And so when they started to charge for parking at Cherry Creek Mall, I thought, so you want to charge people to come to the place where they're going to spend money,
right.
Yes.
And create sales tax. And so instead of having people come there and stay maybe for several more hours, they're like, oh, I have an hour free parking, or, you know, my parking goes up. You know, instead they run into the store that they want to go to instead of going around and looking at other things. And here it is just a few years later, and Brio is closed. I think that has an effect, Susan Kochevar, when you start to even just a little ding here or there.
Yep, I'm sure it does. Well, you know, we had those tax cuts, those Trump tax cuts, and those helped a lot. People had a lot more money in their pocket. But what's happened in Colorado is we had 3 years of 90-cent payroll increases that was stuck into our constitution.
That was minimum wage, right?
Yeah,
minimum wage.
So I have all of that, and, you know, I have to multiply that across all the numbers that I, all of the amount of hours that I have employees. That is a lot. Plus, you have to pay those payroll taxes. So then, you know, you get to the point, do I raise my prices? Where can I cut back? And eventually, you can't anymore. And when businesses raise prices, there goes all that additional minimum wage. It's like a buoy in the water.
It really is. And it just made me think of one other thing. You know, this legislation that right out of the chute, basically Governor Polis signed regarding making it very difficult for oil and gas development here in Colorado. You know, to use policy to shut down a business that actually makes us energy independent and, you know, affordable, efficient, reliable energy is something that, you know, everyday people then can live prosperous lives. And it's just astounding what's been going on down there.
It really is. And now they're coming after your natural gas for your, you know, furnace and your stove.
I mean, really? So what are you supposed to use?
I don't know. Can't use your fireplace.
Got to use the sun to cook.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know what you're doing with it.
I tell you, it is something else out there. Let's see. I think I'd like to try to do one other question. quick. Oh, let's do this very quickly. And that is this is from the Colorado Sun. It says a coalition was pushing to overhaul Colorado's tax system, said that they will not pursue a complete repeal of the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights this year, opting instead for a ballot measure in November that would generate billions in new money with higher taxes on the wealthy. The new initiative, which is expected to receive final legal approval Wednesday, is designed to create a more equitable, I hate that.
Yeah.
More equitable tax system.
And they
in Colorado.
Get to decide that.
Yeah, by lowering the current 4.63% tax rate for households making less than $250,000 a year. An estimated 95% of the taxpayers who are below the threshold would qualify for this tax cut, which would take effect in 2021. For those that make more than $250,000, the additional earnings are taxed at a higher rate, up to a maximum of 8.9%. That's
massive.
Yeah, it's massive. And it's insidious what they're doing, is they are coming out, as Steve always mentions, they are trying to buy votes.
Yeah.
And so they want to buy votes with 95%. And my friends, I hope that you can realize when government comes in and says, I'm going to give you a benefit, but I'm going to charge somebody else or take something more from somebody else. Ultimately, if they don't care about that somebody else, they really don't care about you. They're just trying to buy that vote. And you're going to be in the frying pan at some point as well. Susan Kochevar, you have a quote?
Yeah, well, they never look at it from the other side. In Massachusetts, they decided that all the people that had yachts, bought yachts, those right. expensive luxury yachts, were just, oh, look at all that wealth. And
tax the rich.
It's terrible. So we're just going to put a huge tax on all these yachts. What happened? All the little guys that worked on the docks, you know, servicing
the
yachts and all the factories that built the yachts and all of that whole industry, all the marketing people, everybody completely collapsed those businesses, and they had to go because the whole industry, moved to another
The rich
state.
People quit buying yachts.
Right. Of course. They can't afford it.
Right.
So they kill all those jobs.
Yes, they did directly.
I got to find this quickly. John Kerry had a yacht, and so instead of having his yacht in that state, he moved the registration to another state so he didn't have to pay the tax. And here he's a high tax guy.
Yeah.
Let's jump over here to Jason McBride. Jason, I need a little help today. What day is it?
I was listening to the radio this morning. I was surprised to find out it was Friday.
Yes, I'm having a Monday on a Thursday because I thought it was Friday. So
sounds like a country song.
It does.
You know, I have to wonder what John Kerry needs a yacht for. Does he just want to practice jumping off?
I don't know.
As possible?
No. He wants to relive his Swift boat days.
Oh, Joe.
Well, that was the joke. Everybody said he jumped off the Swift boat and swam away.
Yeah, I tell you. But I got to try to see if I can find that headline. You know, they say Google, you can find anything. Not so much. You know, you can put it in, and anything it seems like that they don't want you to know, I can't find it. But I'm going to try to find that. But, you know, I was just looking here. It says, breaking news, the U.S. Stock futures fall, reflecting continued volatility as investors remain jittery about the economic fallout from the coronavirus. So, Jason, you are front and center on all this. What's your thoughts about today?
Well, this is pretty much what we've been seeing happen for a couple of weeks now. You know, it's down big one day and up big the next. Kim, yesterday, it was another nice big move with the Dow up over 1,100 points. The one thing that was kind of missing from the mix, though, was trading volume, which was pretty low compared to what we've seen on some of the down days. So we did get a recovery. It looked like kind of the big boys were a little hesitant. I'm not surprised the futures are down like 650 right now this morning. But I'll tell you, with the volatility we've had, I wouldn't be surprised either way, if we're down big today or if we start down big and then actually close up. But right now the Dow is below its 200-day moving average, you know, at about 27,200. That could provide a little bit of resistance. But the S&P is still above it, and I believe the NASDAQ is still above it, too. So we may not be quite out of the woods yet on this thing, but at least we're getting some big up days as well in an attempt to recover, unlike what we were seeing initially when just every day was down, 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 down. Mm-hmm. I think they're talking about the Dow have, like, what, 9 down days in a row or something.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jason, actually, during times like this, there's tremendous opportunity, and I think we talked about it yesterday, that different people have different levels of risk tolerance. And I think it's very wise to sit down and figure out what your risk tolerance is. And that is why people should sit down with you and your colleagues at Presidential Wealth Management, so that they're not, you know, don't have knots in their stomach about their nest egg when we have all this volatility.
You know, that's a great point, Kim. And, you know, I don't want to say that I have magic powers, because in reality, a lot of people figure out that their risk tolerance is far less than they thought it was when the market starts behaving like this. I mean, when it's just going up every day and everything's beautiful, most people think their risk tolerance is higher than it actually is. It's kind of like dreaming about being Rambo until you actually start having bullets fly around you, and then it's a different story.
Yeah, yes. I remember I did a workout one time, and they had mirrors on it, and I, you know, the whole class, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, I look different in that mirror than I actually think I look like in my mind. And so I think that's a correlation to your risk tolerance in your portfolio, Jason. Don't comment on that. I shouldn't have said that.
Well, I was going to say you probably look better in real life than, you know, than you think you do. I was going to give you a compliment.
Okay, Jason. Well,
but now I won't, okay, since you told me not to.
Okay. Well, Jason, people should reach out to you. Sit down. Do a discovery session. Phone number, Natalie will be at the switchboards at 7:30. It's 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. And we have a landing page, airpresidential.com. And I would highly recommend that, there's no pressure. I don't think you lock the doors if people come in for a discovery session. I actually know you well, and you really care, and you want people to thrive and prosper. And if they're doing well, you'll say that. And if you can help them out, you'll help them out. So there you have it, Jason McBride.
I sure appreciate it. You guys have a great show. You got a good crew with you there today.
We've got quite a show. If I can get the day right and get the words coming out of my mouth right, you know, we're going to have a great rest of the half hour here, Jason. So thanks so much.
Okay. Bye-bye, Kim.
Have a great day. We're going to go to break. Before we do that, and I know we've got these Supreme Court cases that we have to talk about, but Patty found this information about John Kerry, and it's going to blow your socks off. So I think we have to talk about that. So this is Kim Munson in studio, Susan Kochevar, DK Williams. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Check out my website, kimmunson.com. That's MONSON.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. And please do, if I can't get the day right, please let me know what day it is. But before we get into this, in studio is Susan Kochevar, one of my partners. Greatly appreciate that, because you're an entrepreneur. I'm an entrepreneur. I buy my airtime on my radio shows, which is great, because then I have full editorial control and the guests. But it also means that my partners and those that sponsor the show are really important so that we can keep the lights on and keep everything going. And then DK Williams is in studio as well. He has a great podcast, The Law. And we had mentioned this. Patty had found this headline from the Colorado Sun that we've got this coalition that says that we're going to tax the rich and we're going to lower your taxes. You talk about vote buying. But then what happens is rich people make different decisions. You know, and John Kerry is a rich guy. He's married to one of the Heinz.
The ketchup
Teresa Heinz, yes.
And and you know, they always talk about taxing the rich and taking care of others. And I remembered this headline, and Patty found this. This was from 2013, and it was from the Huffington Post. John Kerry saves $500,000 by docking his 76-foot luxury yacht out of state. Says Massachusetts Senator John Kerry is docking the $7 million yacht in neighboring Rhode Island, allowing him to avoid paying roughly $500,000 in taxes to the cash-strapped Bay State. If the Isabel were kept at the 2004 Democrat presidential nominee's summer vacation home on Nantucket or in Boston Harbor near his city residence, he would be liable for $437,000 in a one-time sales tax. He would also have to pay $70,000 in annual excise taxes. And Rhode Island repealed those taxes in 1993. And so all those people who lost their jobs in Massachusetts, well, Rhode Island created jobs because they lowered those taxes. We just wanted to make that point.
And they lost their jobs, and people lost their businesses, and a lot of that stuff is never recovered again. That's the other, you know, point about that. And it keeps people from wanting to, when they put these taxes on, it keeps other people from wanting to expand or grow. I once talked to a man who has a business where he sprays weeds, and because of some of the regulations and taxes and stuff, he was keeping his business small. He could have expanded, but he didn't want to because there was a penalty for that. You know, he would actually make less money.
Yeah, there's a disincentive in many cases to grow.
It's a terrible thing. And I would also encourage people, you know, Patty found that. Go to Google and type something in and see what that search engine brings up, and then go to something like Bing or a different search engine and type in something and see what comes up, because your information is being filtered.
It truly is. So, now, my friends, it's so great to have you here, and the day is going very quickly. Susan, why don't you take this? Because you had a couple of different Supreme Court cases that you really wanted DK to talk about.
I did, yeah. So for people that don't know DK, he's a lawyer. He'll tell you not to hold it against him.
Exactly.
I beat you to it. Yeah, and he does a fantastic podcast for Speakeasy Ideas. I think you've done like 76 of them?
72 will come out tomorrow.
72.
Right, one a week, a couple weeks off, but almost every week, like 90% of the time, 95% of the time. And the podcast can be found at speakeasyideas.com/thelaw.
Okay.
And on Twitter, it's at thelawdkw. So check those out. And whenever there's a new episode out, I'll tweet it out. So you'll be able to go right to it.
Okay.
Yeah, and I encourage people to listen to those. I usually pick a time, same time every day, so I'll listen on the way to yoga. I can get usually the whole podcast in. And you can also sponsor DK to review a Supreme Court case for you.
If you want to help do the work, contact Bethany at speakeasyideas.com.
And I did that. So one of the things I think we could talk about first is a Supreme Court decision that was called the Paramount Decree, and it affects my industry.
Movies, yes.
At one point, people felt that the movie studios had a vertical monopoly, and they were trying to open up competition, so they said. So they passed these Paramount Decrees, which said that movie studios couldn't tell theaters, well, you have to play all our products, or you can only play stuff in this area. They put all these restrictions in. And so I'll let DK talk about that a little bit.
Well, I mean, you live it, so you'll know the practical applications of what all these things mean far better than most people would. But it was an antitrust suit that was brought by the Department of Justice. Was it the 30s or 40s?
I think it was the 30s, yeah.
The 30s, because that's when movies were booming, right? Mm-hmm. You had the movie studios were getting big. You had to contract actors and actresses that worked for one studio, and they had to make whatever movie they were told to make because they were under contract with that studio. And so make more and more money in that industry. And one of the many things that was addressed in this antitrust decision, and just a point to make, because a lot of times people forget how these things work or don't ever know. This wasn't legislation. This was not something that Congress addressed to fix the problem, because they had already done what the statute was Antitrust Act. And that means you can't monopolize an industry. And so the government, they needed something to do. So they went after the movie industries, say, oh, you guys are monopolizing the industry. And what's really just, you have to almost laugh at it. There were 6 or 7 different movie producing studios mm-hmm. that were as part of this. How can 6 or 7 have a monopoly? I mean, it's like the opposite. Monopoly means one.
Right.
One person controls it. But that's how the government works. They have to justify their salaries. And so they brought this antitrust action. The government did. Not private individual movie
right.
theaters. The government did, to make it fairer, right?
Yes.
And so as that progressed, they came up with the decree. That's why they call it the Paramount Decree. Paramount was one of the main movie producers on it.
Yes.
They were the first one listed, so that's why we use Paramount as a shorthand, about all these different things that the movie industry had to do or couldn't do. And that was all basically central planning that mm-hmm. worked out through the judicial system, which most of the people involved, well, they all had to agree to it. I mean, it was a decree. So they, yeah. I mean, a consent decree. So they all agreed to it. And then the judge had to give a stamp of approval on it. And it's been coming up on 100 years, what, 80 years now or 90 mm-hmm. years. And those same exact things, even if they made sense back then, and that's maybe they didn't, but they certainly don't now. And that's a major issue in the industry.
Yeah, what's coming up now is Department of Justice has asked them to repeal that consent decree.
Right.
So, of course, everyone in my industry is like, oh, my gosh. You know,
change. So change is scary.
Yeah, it's going to completely upend our industry. You know, it's going to ruin the theaters, because at one time the movie studios even owned the theaters and things were really booming. And there were some beautiful movie palaces in mm-hmm. all of the cities. And so, of course, people in my industry, you know, wanted theater owners to write stuff to the Department of Justice to tell them, no, don't do this. But one of the things I find is people within whatever industry they're in, they're all limited government until it gets to their industry.
And they want protection.
And they want protection. That's a problem. And I would not support, speak against pulling off that dissent decree, because we need free markets and to open it up. And there was a convention recently, the drive-ins, and somebody's made a DVD about all these small, beautiful movie palaces. And I'm watching the DVD, and they're talking about how sad it was
to lose these.
And they were beautiful, beautiful theaters. Well, I was telling Dave, because he watched it with me, I said, you know, Dave, it looks to me like they put that consent decree in, and it destroyed all of those movie theaters, all those jobs. It's just such a huge loss. And we see competition would have arose without the consent decrees. And now exactly. the industry is now that with a swipe of a pen, they'll pull off those regulations, which I think should happen. But now all these people that built their businesses on all these regulations are at risk, including me. I think we'll all be fine. I think that's going to be a really good thing, because there are lots of competitors in the market, especially now. But that's just, you really need to think about your industry and the regulation. And
it's not, scary.
It is scary.
It's scary when here you know what you have and you've worked within this. It is scary to look into the future and say these things might change. And to that point, again, you know, we all talk with freedom people quite often, but when it gets to their industry, they're like, somebody should do something.
Right.
Yes.
And then the next that somebody should do something is government comes in and said, I'm happy to do that.
Exactly.
The PBIs, I'm happy to do something on that. Dave, we're going to go to break here. How about a final thought, though, on this Paramount decree? What would you like people to make sure that they remember this morning?
Well, it's any time that the government gets involved to fix something, they're probably not going to fix it. And the Sherman Antitrust Act is a good example of that. Even if it had some real applications, most of the time it doesn't. Like, they look at somebody, like they threaten Google or Amazon and say Google has got whatever percentage of the internet search engine basis. There are still options out there. I mean, nobody is prevented from using any of these other search
Bing.
Options. Right? And what's a Go, or something like that, which is supposed to not censor anything and be and not save your searches for any purpose. There are options out there. And if people want to use them, they will. They don't need the government to come in and make them not use Amazon or
Google.
Right. Yeah. So they can't. They don't need to make it harder to use Google. People just need to decide what they want to do, and it will work itself out, like in this consent decree.
Well, and one other thing, which we have learned is cronyism, that big business and big government like each other, because then big business can, mm-hmm. you know, donate to campaigns or a variety of different things, and then they can get those PBIs to put in rules and regulations that can squash the competition.
And explain to the neophytes like me what a PBI is.
A politician, bureaucrat, or special interest.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah, we made that up ourselves. So, hey, let's go to break. When we come back, Citizens United is something that we hear on a consistent basis. And there's, I hear young people say, we need to get rid of Citizens United.
Yep.
So, D.K. Williams, we want to hear what you have to say about
that. I'll explain it.
Okay, this is Kim Munson. Check out the website, kimmunson.com. Susan Kochevar, D.K. Williams is in studio. We'll be right back.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim@kimmunson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Check out the website, Kim Munson, that's MONSON.com, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And I just wanted to tell you, you know, when I opened the show, I said, hey, it's Happy Friday, and I wanted to make you think that I was mixed up, but actually, I knew that. I was just doing a Joe Biden imitation, Steve.
Good one. Good impression.
Josephine Biden is here.
Okay, we don't have enough time.
And anyway, based on what he did with his sister and his wife the other day,
gosh.
Josephine fits right in. So, welcome to the show.
If you don't know what happened, and you could tell that he had really practiced because he could say the Declaration of Independence and got all those words out.
I think there was a prompter, though. I did read that.
Oh, was a prompter. That's how he got it. But there wasn't a prompter because he looked at his sister and introduced her as his wife. He's like, oh, wait.
Wait a minute. You're my sister, not my wife.
Yeah, there was a prompter. We don't want to make that mistake twice.
That's right. Well, I do this all without a prompter, and this morning it is evident. So, okay, D.K. Williams, Citizens United.
Yes.
I hear young people say, Citizens United, we got to get
rid of
that.
It's horrible. It's the end of our democracy. And that's what most of the Democratic candidates for president are saying as well. Yep. And this is one of the reasons I started the podcast. It is because you will hear people decry some Supreme Court decision or any level of appellate decision. And it becomes so obvious that they have not read the case. And, you know, it's one thing for average people not to read Supreme Court cases. I get it. Most people don't read them. They're boring. Most of them. But when elected officials start doing it, like Congress people, mm-hmm. and they do it every day almost, it seems like I come up with another example. And they're saying how it says that it gives corporate entities personhood and it treats them as individuals. That Citizens United does not do that. That's a concept that goes way back, and that's another issue to discuss. But Citizens United didn't create that idea, and it doesn't actually do it in this case. And what is amazing is that the actual facts of Citizens United, and this was so important to me, it's episode 2 of the law. It was the second one I did because it's so obvious that people don't know what they're talking about because they haven't read it. And if you haven't read something, you really can't have a valid opinion about mm-hmm. it. And then what is even worse is that you'll hear somebody on the news say something horrible about it, and you believe them, but they haven't read it. So now not only have you not read it, you're basing your opinion on what somebody else said who hasn't read it either. It's like the worst game of telephone in American history. Citizens United is this group. It's a conservative, with air quotes, whatever you want to call them, group. And they had put together this anti-Hillary documentary. I mean, it's clearly biased. I mean, it wasn't, mm-hmm. I mean, nobody denies that.
And what was Citizens United exactly?
It is just this group of people, and it still exists. It's like, I don't know if it's what its tax status is, if it's an independent expenditure committee or a 501c4. I don't know what, but it's just a political entity. Mm-hmm. And they do things like advocate against Hillary. That's what they were doing when she was running for president against Obama the first time when everybody thought she was going to win, right? She certainly did. It's a common pattern with her. She assumes, of course, she's going to win, and she hasn't. So they put together this documentary, anti-Hillary documentary, and they were going to show it. Like, that was the whole point. But there was a Federal Election Commission rule that said within a certain number of months or weeks, whatever it was, of an election, you can't do electioneering, which is saying, you know, vote for this guy or don't vote for that person. And
wait, aren't we in America?
Well, exactly. Right. And that was the issue. So Citizens United said, no, this is a First Amendment issue. We can show this documentary. And that went up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the U.S. Supreme Court held in this horrible decision, if you listen to the people that complain about it, the U.S. Supreme Court said, no, the federal government cannot censor documentaries. That's what it says. That is literally what it says. That is,
that's it, huh?
Yeah, those are the facts of the case. A group wanted to show a documentary. The federal government said, no, you cannot. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, yes, you can. That's it. And it's so obvious that people don't know that. And it's a deliberate misinformation campaign at this point.
Well, what they're trying to do is they're trying to shut down voices that they don't want to have out there. We see that all the time. Bob from Michigan had, and I've always thought this, it's so interesting that unions, you know, who they take money many times via force from employees, that they can do a whole lot of different things. If you go to Open Secrets, heavy hitters, they actually look at the money that goes into elections. And out of the top 10, I think at least six of them are unions that contribute to political campaigns.
Yep.
And the two biggest teachers unions are right there. And so when we talk about paying our teachers more, why don't we pay them more instead of taking their money and then putting it into campaigns? But this is what Bob said. He says the rules that apply to Citizens United should apply to a union and vice versa. DK, your comment on that?
Well, yeah, whatever the rules are, they should apply to everyone. And the First Amendment should apply to everyone. So absolutely. Yeah, everyone should be able to produce whatever documentary they want and show it wherever someone is willing to show it. That's the answer. And it's not that difficult to grasp. And here's a little bit of irony. Hillary has a documentary, I guess, out now that just came out maybe today on Hulu. And in it, she bashes Bernie a lot, or at least some. I've seen some of the quotations. And according to what she would want Citizens United to say, the government could ban that documentary, her own documentary, for being shown because she's bashing Bernie if that became within, you know, close to an election, and we just had some. So there's the irony in that.
Exactly.
Once you start banning other people's stuff that you don't like, it's going to come back on you eventually. And that's why there should be no bans of documentaries.
Well, and you mentioned the Federal Election Commission. I really think that your money, all this is inherent in freedom of speech, and this campaign finance reform and all these things, we need to get rid of those laws, in my opinion. Susan, what do you think?
I think we absolutely do. You know, citizens are restricted in how much they can give to a campaign, just individual citizens.
Right.
But these political organizations are not. So people wonder why a politician's loyalties is more to the political groups than it is to the individuals. Well, that's why you have it. It just suppresses the individuals.
Yeah, and money in politics, money exists in politics because government has power.
Exactly.
And if people, power is like anything else. If there's a market for it, people will buy it. So the only way to get money out of politics, which is what you hear all the time, is to take the power away from government because politicians can't sell what they don't have. Otherwise, it is up for grabs. And it's in the form of campaign contributions, but that's what it is. They're buying access. They're buying influence.
Well, and that's one of the things that I thought of when we came to this Paramount decree. It looked to me like somebody got unhappy because the studios were doing so well, so they're going to stop that. And that's one of the issues. That's what you get, you know, envy in there, and people can go to the government and do that. And that's why I wanted, you know, when all this Paramount decrees come up, before I got really upset about it, I said to DK, let me sponsor a podcast so we can look at this and see what really happened and what was really said.
Right.
Well, and, you know, many people, and when you're talking about envy, you know, then they're always talking about money.
Mm-hmm.
But the real thing is power. And that is why the American idea, the founders grappled with this conversation that we're having. And they said, how can you try to, human nature is people want more power. They want to take other people's stuff without having to work for it. It used to be weapons, DK. Somebody'd ride into town with a gun and take your stuff.
Right.
Now they ride into town with a policy and they take your stuff.
And it's, they still have a gun, ultimately. If you don't pay your taxes, eventually somebody with a gun is going to show up and take you away.
They're
going
to put you in a cage.
They're going to take your stuff. Now, I would encourage all of you to go to this website, Open Secrets. Just Google Open Secrets Heavy Hitters. And if you take a look at this, this is from All Cycles, I think from the early 90s. And then you could go year by year. But in the top 10, let's see here. We have, well, we had the teachers union. They're now down a little bit. The American Federation of Teachers put in over almost $91 million. $91 million into elections. And 99.6% of that went to Democrats. Do you not think that they're trying to buy power?
Well, yeah, absolutely they are. And even FDR and one of the original union leaders of the AFL-CIO thought that the idea of public service unions, people that work for the government, unionizing was absurd. And there's a reason why they are the last ones left, among the last ones left. I mean, they're still strong Teamsters and other real unions, as I like to call them, out there. But, you know, when the management is politicians and it's not their money they're spending, well, it's easy to give them what they want.
This is going to blow you away. Number five on this list is the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. They put in almost $130 million, and 99.5% of that went to Democrats. And so it'll blow your socks away. And so away off the whole.
Blow them off.
Blow them off. There you go. So we are out of time. And DK Williams.
That was awesome.
It's just been great having you here. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
That. And again, how can people find
you? It's The Law with DK Williams. If you Google that, you'll find it. But it's on speakeasyideas.com/The Law. And follow me on Twitter at The Law, DKW.
Okay. And Susan Kochevar, it's great to have you in studio as well. And we're going to be you're going to be opening soon, right?
Soon, yeah. We're watching the weather and looking at pictures right now. So.
Okay.
Stay tuned.
Get out to the ADA drive-in. It's awesome.
You got it. So our quote for today?
From Justice Thomas, who has a fantastic Created Equal documentary. I recommend it. He's a fascinating man. One of our best Supreme Court justices, and he's called an originalist.
Indeed.
He says, today, now, it is time to move forward, a time to look for what is good in others, what is good in our country. It's time to see what we have in common, what we have to share as human beings and citizens. Justice Clarence Thomas.
Love it. So Susan Kochevar, DK Williams, it's great having you here today. Read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you. And God bless America, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, which is Friday. Like a new moon rising, fierce.